We interrupt the Hammerbarn Project podcast feed to bring you this breaking story. Frank has the details.
Thanks for that, Owen. Well, as we not so subtly teased on the last episode.
Oh boy.
Today's another special day. We've just had a special, amazing weekend. And here we are talking with the specialist of the specials. Didn't word that very well. Didn't come out how I wanted.
It is crazy that this is the kind of stuff we get to do. Listeners, this is not wasted on us. This is bonkers. But what are we doing, guys?
We're speaking to Joe Brum, Brendan.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Even as I'm hearing the words.
Oh, that Joe Brum. You mean the Joe Brum?
Oh, the Joe Brum from the Joe Brum. Joe Brum. Should we waste more time?
No. Or we've wasted enough listener time over the last 70 episodes of our show.
Should we throw to it? This is what the listeners came for. He's the man.
They're not here for us.
The myth, the legend. Ladies, gentlemen, everybody, let's do it.
Joe Brum.
Well, I never would have believed in a million years that I got to even once say, welcome to the Hammerbarn Project, Joe Brum, but I certainly didn't think I'd ever say welcome back to the Hammerbarn Project.
How you going, guys?
Yeah, good, mate.
So good. We were just telling the listeners that we're particularly good because we did get to go over to Sydney for the world premiere of The Sign, and we're still on a high. I don't think I'll ever come down from this. thank you so much for having us there and for what you've given the world once again, mate.
Yeah, no worries, man. No, it was it's good to mark those sort of things with a big screen viewing, I reckon.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, and marking things. I mean, I'm so glad to have been able to be a part of it. Is this like a big thing for you guys? Like, is this the first time you've done something on that scale?
Let me think. When we made The Sign a couple of years ago, we had a big screening for like our wrap party. We tend to like at the beginning or, you know, big apps, we do mark them out with parties. No, but that's one of the first times we've done it in a big cinema, I would say, from memory.
Yeah. Right. Ah, man.
My memory is shocked.
I think that's allowed. I think we'll grant you that.
It was great fun because when we came in to the cinema, or at least when we were coming along, we met you guys you were just jumping out of your
on
taxi
the street,
at the time. And it was great. You get introduced to your whole family, of course, getting to meet Dan for the first time and your mum, Chris.
Yeah.
It was really fun. And then we were walking in together, but I have to tell you, because then your mum pulled us aside. She's like, now, I don't hear very well, but I've got my hearing aid in now. So what is it you boys do again? What was it? And we're like, oh, well, you know, we do the podcast. And she's like, oh, I've never really got into the podcast. It's a whole nother world. So I guess we've been telling that story because I guess there's a character you don't really have to write very much. Really.
the initial iPad Skyping scene kind of wrote itself, to be honest.
Yeah, it was the perfect moment. Just, oh, I don't really do the podcasting. I'm like, oh, well, I am talking. I feel like I'm talking
to my
mum.
Your nana. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. I had a freak out fan moment meeting your mum. I managed to wrangle her into a selfie with me, and I showed my whole family. And yeah. We're all huge Nana Healer fans. So that was a big moment for me.
She would have loved that.
She was great.
One of the things we're wondering is like, well, how do you feel now? The rest of Australia feels, and the world feels a certain way, but how do you feel now that it's out there? Obviously you've been holding on to it for a while. Now what does it feel like now that the world can touch The Sign?
Yeah, honestly, it's sort of relief because I kind of feared, I don't know, that something would go wrong, that it would get fully leaked or something. I think because it was one of those apps where I really wanted, you know, I didn't want anyone to know the ending or anything like that. So I'm relieved that it's finally got out with a minimum of spoilers and leaks and things like that, because I wanted, you know, you want the audience to enjoy it the way you designed it to be enjoyed, which is discovering every little moment for the first time on the first watch. So it's, I mean, we always feel so, like really proud of particular apps sometimes, and they're the ones you get really excited about. You know that there's something's gone right in those apps. So whenever you're sitting on one of those, like Cricket or The Sign or Sleepy Time, you make this show for the audience, and so it's really quite a lovely feeling leading up to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess, well, my other question is, like, how did it feel leaving a nation emotionally compromised for a week after Ghost Basket dropped and we all saw The Sign out in front of the house? Is that something that needed to be discussed in boardrooms? Because, you know, Joe, there's people around Australia who've got important jobs that they need to focus on. They can't be thinking all the time about whether they're going to move house. But, you know, was that, how did you, did that reaction fall the way you were anticipating, or was it bigger than?
It was definitely bigger than, although it probably shouldn't be surprised these days with Bluey, but yeah, it was definitely, I think it's definitely what I was aiming for. It's for sure. You want the most you want is for people to feel like, you know, to go up and go down and cry and laugh and all that. So definitely judging by the emails I got from friends and, you know, people, it seemed to have landed. Probably.
Definitely.
definitely landed.
Yeah, I think there was a whole bunch of theories running around there for the week. That was, I think everybody very, very compromised for an entire week.
Had you always wanted to do like a last minute cliffhanger sort of thing? Are you a fan of those sorts of to be continued?
Yeah, totally. I still remember Back to the Future, the end of Back to the Future.
Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah, of course.
It was like to be continued, and then like 15 years later, we were still waiting for it. I've thought, look, that would be a pretty cool thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, indeed.
So you're creating an episode, as we know, is four times the length you're used to. What was the challenges around that? What do you think was the most unexpected challenge from doing this longer format for you and for the whole team?
For the whole team, we were so used to just one team gets, in terms of animation anyway, one animation team gets an episode, even one art direction team gets an episode. This suddenly was, we had to divide it up and, each team got its own bit. And so it wasn't a massive challenge, but it was just so, it was so different to what we usually did. And weirdly, it was only meant to be three episodes long. It was only meant to be a 21-minute special or so, but I couldn't fit it in.
Right.
And so it spread out to four, which one of my animators the other day was saying worked out really well because each of our four teams could then be on it. And that means everyone got to have a crack at this and we're all on the credits together.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I like that. That worked out.
Yeah. Well, because I was saying to Dan after the screening, I was so pleased to see how you approached it, because I know from, like, I'm a big Futurama fan. I'm also a big fan of like Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon, and they did the trip, and then the Futurama did like Bender's Big Score and stuff like that, where they were released in some parts of the world as four episodes and other parts of the world as movies. And you can watch them as movies, but they also feel like four distinct things. But it was so cool to see it fleshed out, and the pace of the episode just feels like it was always supposed to be that. It was a unit. Did it feel like you were making a movie at the time? Because I think you always thought of a sort of Frisky and Rad sort of movie, didn't you, in the back of your head?
I did. Yeah, I thought that would be a good. Initially, I thought that could make the Bluey movie. I think around season one or two, I thought, oh, it'd be good to make a movie, and it was going to be, you know, start with what turned out to be Double Babysitter and move into a wedding or something. I didn't give it too much thought. I definitely wanted this special to read as a whole, not four separate eps or anything like that. So it kind of just felt, it's the same structure I use in the short stuff. It's just you there's more room to fill it out. So in that sense, it did sort of feel like writing a normal ep.
You still
got the same points. It just was, you could spend more time in each section.
Yeah.
What do you feel like it allowed for? What were some of the greatest advantages? I feel like there's a lot more gags in there.
Callbacks,
I don't know if and the callbacks. I'm not sure if it's just because you had more time or whether that's just the nature of the slower pacing.
Possibly, yeah.
Or the different pacing.
Yeah, it was, my main fear going into it was you would lose the kids, right? It's the kids are the main audience, and suddenly you go into 28 minutes. So you don't want, I didn't want to just do the barrage so that they're, you know, they can never look away. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that, you know, that was my main fear. It's like, how do I write this in a way where it still ebbs and flows and it's got its mm-hmm. pacier sections and then its quieter sections and the kids stay interested? So, yeah, there's probably more gags. It was everything that I've done for the other eps, that while there's slightly more adult conversations going on, I had to make sure there was still stuff going on in the backgrounds with the kids.
It took me a couple of watches to notice Socks having, like, with the headpiece walking around and getting redirected by the parents. I did not see that the first time. Yeah. So that's a good one.
No, I mean, I bet the kids, that's what they're watching.
That's what they're watching,
The first time around. Yeah, it was, the difference is you've just got more time to, I don't know, you just don't have to rush through everything as breakneck as you do in a normal 7-minute episode.
Well, it must have been fun hitting all the beats of, like, a wedding, because I feel like everything's in there. I just feel like I'm either at that wedding or I want to be at that wedding. And I think, was it Marty, did you want to know?
No, this is Frank's question.
Frank's question. Oh, sorry, Frank, you ask.
Well, you know, you said many times that most of the stories come from your own life.
Yep.
And, you know, what those experiences are. So my question is, did you make a really cute 7-year-old flower girl? Is that fair to say?
I probably would have, yeah. I can only imagine.
You've got time to break out the album if you wanted, yeah.
That's it. I've just got memories of being at weddings as a kid, and they, I don't know, And those sort of big family functions, you know, where there's a sea of adults and then this little group of kids doing their thing. So I really wanted to, probably my favorite shot in that whole wedding sequence is when the kids, the three girls, are on the wedding seats during the ceremony and they're just swaying their legs in unison.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yes.
Because weddings are kind of long, and that's, you know, kids will make their own entertainment. And my other favorite shot is it's just a probably 25 frame shot of just Stripe and Mort just laughing their heads just off. Yeah, just really Daryl.
And just like spitting and like,
Yeah.
I love Rad's on the mic just getting all, he's about to pontificate about marriage and everything. He's been married for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Just interrupted by his new wife.
So good. That's so many good bits.
And it's nice as well, because we kind of get that feeling, because quite often, like, Mort is with the healers, and then they, you know, like Nana, like, we haven't really seen them together. So you get that sensation of when different parts of your life come together.
Yeah, it's what a wedding is.
Yeah, exactly. So it's funny when you have Mort saying, "Hey, everybody quiet down," and it's all the other characters, you know, and yeah, just him hanging out with Nana and those sorts of things.
You're right. And a bit of thought went into that, who should be at that wedding, because it would have been good to have, like, Lucky's dad there and stuff, but I couldn't justify why Lucky's dad would be at Frisky's wedding, right? But,
yeah.
So very brief kind of backstories had to be told, like, Mort must have grown up with Frisky. You know, Frisky's probably always been around as a kid and
right.
Fleshing out that relationship with Chili and Frisky was really fun to watch as well. Like, it became so obvious that she was more than just a babysitter friend that she met recently. They were teenagers together, and they used to go to the Lookout to Think, you know.
And that is definitely my wife's favorite line.
It's a good spot, actually. Because there's nothing, like, particularly original in the bride running away and all that, but where you want to really have some fun is in that relationship. You use it as an excuse for those two to show what's there. Yeah, I like that too.
Mm. Yeah. And while we're talking about, like, fleshing out relationships and making the story feel important, like, that's why this whole episode is just amazing, because I'm so invested in this family. And I'm so invested in their connection with their house. And and that I suppose that leads into just moving house and stories of moving house and how that, have you got any, like stories from your real life about that really heavily impacting family or being a difficult decision or a difficult thing to navigate?
Yeah, massively. Like we moved when I was 5, and then probably the big move we made was when I was maybe 11 or 12, and you know, a lot older than Bluey. But yeah, it was a life-defining event. You uproot everything and you change everything, and it is one of those things where I guess you don't know, I think what's fascinating for me is in later years, and I mean in the last 5 or 6, I rediscovered a mate from, you know, my best mate from childhood, right? And
yeah, right.
It was fascinating just finding out what, you know, where childhood friends ended up and how it all changed, and everything I guess you had in primary school changed through high school. So I guess I had a naive look at it after the move, thinking, well, my life is now interrupted. But it was weird to find out that, well, it kind of just got interrupted anyway, you know, and it changed anyway while you were gone. It never would have been what you thought it'd be. So,
yeah. One of my favorite quotes is from Bill Nye, the science guy. When people ask him, why does that work this way? Or how does the universe work this way? Or like, isn't it incredible? And he says, well, if things were any other way, they'd be different. And that's sort of like all that means. Like sometimes you think something is taking a path, but often it's just you connecting the dots in the way back. And I don't know, I always think about that when I think of huge changes in life and how they would have just worked out sort of. I don't know. Maybe Calypso's right. I don't know.
Calypso's always right.
Calypso is always right. In terms of the germ of the idea, because we've got, like, you know, we talked about the fact that you've been thinking about the wedding for a while, and we've got the moving theme, and also the story, the we'll cease type of story. Can you break down where did those things come together? What came together first? They just seem so tightly woven.
Yeah, good question. I'll have to cast my mind back. There is always every episode has a different, I guess, little path of where the ideas, which idea comes first and what next. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure I can remember with the sign. I know, I guess that story was always in my head, the We'll See story. I always loved that story, and it was so kind of applicable. I think from memory, the core of it was I wanted to tell a story about endings.
Yep.
That's where this whole thing started. It was like a story about endings. And that kind of led, I think, to the farmer story.
Yeah, okay.
And then it's really just about, okay, so we've got this farmer story. How do I then have the characters live it?
Yeah, right.
Without like hitting the audience over the head. So, you know, after every event that happens in the car ride, there's the equivalent of a character saying, "That's such bad luck."
Yeah.
But it's, you know, the line isn't "That's bad luck." It's, "Oh, we didn't need that," or "It's not helping us find Frisky," or something. So it was about having Bluey live through, you know, her own version of that farmer's story, and then, you know, getting Bluey to this point. And the ending of the episode is really once Bluey sits down next to Bingo at the sign and starts telling her the story of the farmer, because I just that was the point I had to get the story to. It was like, that's where I wanted Bluey to get to, where she, you know, she understands, and she's been on that journey, and she knows there's no answer for Bingo except for this sort of slightly answerless story that helped her. Yep. And to me, it's really that's the whole takeaway from this episode. And then obviously you have the ending as you know it, but that's the end of Bluey's arc. I think that was probably pretty early on in my process.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's interesting, a little tidbit for the listeners, if you'll allow me, Joe. I got the opportunity to record for this episode.
Did you?
Something,
really?
I know, right?
What?
And it's something that I let the listeners know of recently, and I'm still so, like, blown away. So I went into the studio 2 years ago. It was February 2022. And at the time, the lines that I got were from the redacted script, and the working title of the script was "We'll See" at the time, instead of the sign. I think it was, and I was in there as a Dulux dog. And yeah, I just thought that was kind of cool when I saw that the sign was coming out, and then sitting in the cinema seeing "We'll See," I'm like, it's kind of, I kind of felt really cool having that insight of how that must have developed and come along in the journey of the episode.
You felt so cool about it. You sat on it for 2 years. I know. I didn't tell us.
I was so scared I would ruin stuff. So like, anything about the house being sold, about that?
Well, first of all, you did a great job. And second, the episode was called "We'll See" from script through to about maybe a month before we finished it.
Okay.
And it's the file folder was "We'll See," and every meeting was "We'll See," and it was "We'll See" for, you know, for a good year working on it. And then I always knew, in my head, that was a temp name. I can't call it "We'll See" because it's just too, it's too ambiguous. It's a bit pretentious. It doesn't work. And I remember changing it to the sign kind of overnight. And then Richie, our director, the next day just completely freaked out. It kicked off a good week or 2 week long debate between various people in the studio who were mourning the loss of this title, "We'll See."
Wow.
There were some really good debates on its merits and all that.
Yeah.
I do think it was the right decision in the end.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, I'm so excited to be Sheepdog number two. I'm going to change all my internet avatars to Sheepdog two, at the real Sheepdog two. And I've got a photo of me, Justin Asterbury, who we recorded with, because I recorded in Adelaide. And I was nerding out at the screening a little bit, asking Dan what sort of mic he would have been using. Where was it, the Neumann or the Telefunken and whatnot? And Justin took a photo of me, and I was actually wearing, I was going to bring it, but it's dirty. I picked it up and I'm like, that's too dirty to bring and show Joe Brum. But it was a vintage Dulux paint ad t-shirt.
No way.
And so layout artist or background artist?
Background artist, I believe.
She'll have to.
Yeah, Gemma's background. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to send her some photos of me wearing that because she thought that was pretty funny. but also, it puts me in mind of a song by, I'm a huge Wolfpack fan, and one of the guitarists from Wolfpack, Theo Katzman. I'll have to send you a link to a song of his called "All's Well That Ends Well," and it's off his. Modern Johnny Sings Songs in the Age of Vibe album. And it's when I was sitting in the cinema watching the "We'll See" story, watching the farmer story, it's a song about that fable and stuff. And it's a rad song. And I'll have to send it to you. Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Send it on.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing that I had watching the episode is there's a lot of references back to previous episodes in there, which is a little bit different. You know, we have one or two every once in a while and characters reappear and stuff like that. Is that something that was more so allowed by the format, or is that something that, because you were talking about, you know, you wanted to be about endings, was that something that it was really a capstone at the end of season three? Was that the thinking behind it? Was there any particular motivation for putting all those additional things in?
I think it's partly just seeing how much Bluey fans enjoy seeing all that stuff and Easter eggs and things like that. So
cool facts, yeah.
It was partly a response to that, and partly it's just, I guess it's neater from a writer's point of view to not have to invent a new thing that's happening. If there's if you've already established a good cause or something, then it's just neater to bring that in. So I felt like the whole crew had been on a journey with Winton's dad for three seasons.
Yeah.
And it felt
the
right.
The hero of the episode.
Well, there's, you know, in particular, there's one episode where I think Jen was the layout artist at the time, and she just put him under a tree in the background, eating a hot dog by himself. Once you see that, you want it to work out.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I root for.
Yeah, I think you talked about that last time because, you know, we asked about your favorite running joke, and I think that's what you brought Winton, up is just Winton's dad constantly being put in the background and being sad. So ultimately that has turned into what this was. It's great that it's got seeded that way.
And just the, I almost punched the air in the cinema, the our mum likes your dad.
Yes.
That was cool. And in TV shop, it was a lot of fun having him putting the moves on. Yeah, we had a great time.
Just flexing, yeah.
Yeah.
Look, the other thing, apart from moving house and some of the other themes, this episode has got a lot of people talking about the Queensland road rules and just how true to life that is. Was that a case of we're going to get all the characters here and then you went, oh, we need to run this by legal and make sure we can actually do this properly because we're going to get picked up on it? Or was that just you just did it and the legal team worked it out afterwards?
Yeah, probably the latter. It started with Bluey's on this journey. She thinks it's all going, you know, really bad, but something really great needs to happen. And from there, it's like, all right, what's the best thing that could possibly happen to a kid car ride? And it's like they get to sit in the front seat.
Universal.
And I just and I Googled it, and that was the rules. It was fine. I was like, this is great. There's three kids in the back seat. The car's full. This is meant to be. I'll admit, I didn't. Once you read it quickly on one site, you're like, yeah, that's good enough for me. So as far as I know, it's all legal. I don't think it's recommended, but it's all technically legal. And I think
the best kind of legal.
Yeah.
But she's only doing it because it's an emergency. It's fine.
Yeah.
We get it. We understand she wouldn't use it. Julie wouldn't be using it.
Joel Edgerton said we could.
Yes. I probably should have known that. it achieves so much. It's such a masterstroke because it's funny to watch Chili as a parent just quickly Googling something to make sure it's okay. So much of that happens that I've seen just
for
like
real
nowadays it's just like, oh, can you do that quickly check? And that's it. But it's also a gag that immediately gets any keyboard warriors on the socials after the episode drops to get them off your back straight away because look it's double barreled. It's so good.
We had it similarly in the dump in season one.
Ooh, right.
That when they were in the car wash, the kids technically. By law, it came back. No, the kids have to be seated in their seats with seatbelts on.
Oh,
I didn't know.
Whilst in the car wash, I remember thinking, "What? Like, but the car's not moving."
Yeah.
Wow. You know, but you know, that's the rules.
And, wow.
And I can't remember where we ended up, but I think
there you go.
I guess common sense. I hope it's common sense. Kind of, took over in the end on that one.
Yeah.
Wowee. There you go.
So I want to take us back to Ghostbusters because, of course, that's the other episode that has recently led us to all the wonderful things we're talking about. I get really big Scooby-Doo vibes when I watch that episode, you know, with the whole, oh, there's nothing to see here and that sort of thing. Was there a particular inspiration or a game that you perhaps played with your kids for that episode, or was that more or less the vehicle to get us to the sign?
Oh, they definitely always were obsessed with laundry baskets and playing different games and crawling under them. I think Ghost Basket probably was a slight confection. I don't think it didn't consciously start out as Scooby-Doo. I just remember while during writing it, at one point just going, geez, this feels like a friggin' Scooby-Doo episode.
And then you just lean into it with that, like running backwards and forwards through the corridor shot.
Precisely.
And the jolty camera with that hallway shot, just but that that's so good.
Right?
It didn't need to be there, but but it just really sells it.
It's actually a hard thing to fake.
I'll bet. Yeah,
exactly.
And to be honest, I don't think there's ever any reason you would have a shaking camera in animation. I think that's probably more of like a live action time-lapse thing, but, you know, we went for it.
Who's the hero of those moments, Joe, when you're like, when it doesn't need to be there, but does someone go, oh, this is so hard, but you're, I need to be this moment's hero. This has to be.
Well, it's Richie. Richie's the hero who will figure out how to do that and make the camera work just right, amongst many.
Nice.
I have a question. I'm not sure if you've probably answered this one before, but it is in Ghost Basket. Where did the grannies come from? That's another kids game, because everybody loves the grannies. I think they're becoming an entity of themselves.
Yep.
Is that a game you played with your kids? Because it's kind of like Blue and Bingo come up with it themselves. It's not a bandit game particularly.
Oh, no, 100% from the kids. They just rocked in one day dressed as grannies and we were just like, holy dooly, what the hell? That was hilarious.
There it is.
That's great.
There's your answer, everyone. Yeah.
And then kind of just swiftly I added, kind of making fun of old people. And yeah. We were away.
Yeah, away you go.
It never fails.
And one of the other things on that that
loving.
One of the other things on that I find really interesting, and I think it is the case with Ghost Basket, is you tell an entire story within the world of Bluey, but not making reference to the fact that it's a real world, like very much like Trains or Bus. Or was there a point at which you realized you could sort of do that? You're like, I'm just going to tell an entirely different story, but using my Bluey puppet characters. Was that a particular moment, or you're looking back now and you're like, oh yeah, I guess it is.
It probably doesn't happen that much in actual games that you end up playing with the kids. It is a little bit of an exaggeration. I suppose it's just the characters fully lent in to the role. I think probably Claire Renton, she probably kicked it off a bit with work, and I thought, yeah, it's kind of fun, you know, they're just fully invested in their roles.
Sure.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And then the natural end of that is these chapter books for Bluey that are out at the moment, Trains, Taxi and Bus, which are...
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah.
They're written as though...
I just picked up one of those the other day. My daughter loves it, yeah.
Yeah, but there's no mention, from memory, there's no mention of Bluey or Bandit or Bingo. It's just their character names as if they're real people with real lives and past and history. So that's kind of it then taken to an absurd level.
That's it. I think there's a little bit of a dramatis personale in the front. There's like played by. But my daughter was showing me the cover. She's like, you know, I got her some of the episode books. And she's like, yeah, well, I've had that one. And I've had that one. I know that one. But this one's new and different. I'm like, well, you know, there's the episode on Train. She's like, no, but this one's a real train. And the fact that she actually had to point that out to me. And I you know, the whole time just like, no, it's a Trains. It's the episode about she's noticing that there's a difference and I'm not between reality and fantasy. So there we go.
Beautiful.
So don't worry about losing the kids. You got to worry about if you're
losing
money.
The adults. Yeah.
Beautifully illustrated by our art director, Raph.
Ah, right. Oh, I was wondering, because it is that slightly different style, and but it complements it so beautifully.
Yeah.
And just getting, you know, when you do want to do things that have got that bit more reality in it. Good fun.
Yeah.
So there was a reference, of course, to Grandpa Bob showing up and finding himself. Now, I could be wrong here, but we did a crossover with Mary and Kate from Gotta Be Done, and we one of the questions we posited was, give us your best sort of headcanon fan theory. And theirs was about Grandpa Bob. And I'm pretty sure they used the phrase finding himself off in India somewhere. I don't know if they remember that, because I know you've just spoken to them the other day. Where did that come from? Is that just something where you just went, yep, here's a good excuse to write it? Or did someone hear that from somewhere?
Oh, I imagine I probably mentioned it in one of the interviews with them. It was... I had that idea in my head from quite a while back, right. Because I had this problem where Bob had faded out in exchange for Mort, and then everyone started asking, hey, where's Bob? And I was thinking, yeah, he's missed like Christmases and all sorts here. And he's kind of, people are now thinking he's dead. So it needed to be a kind of a justifiable excuse for a 2 or 3 year absence. And I thought, you know what? Yeah, he's on a spiritual quest that's taken him through India.
Nice.
To find himself. Yeah. If you can think of a better idea, then let me know.
it's a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
That was the best I could come up with.
We could all learn from Bob.
Coming back to the sign and the whole, you know, if, like I think for so many people that final sequence that plays out after, you know, the final couple of lines, the song, everybody's already crying. But the idea of, you know, the whole theme of moving and not moving. One of the things I take a lot from the episode is that line, but I don't want a better life. Mm. And just this, and the whole experience of Bandit pulling up the sign and the effort. And I don't know, when I watch that bit, I take it as having to break societal expectations around, you know, you should be trying to prepare, make your family, put them in a good position by worrying about, you know, money and those sorts of things. And just the feeling of being responsible for your family as a parent. That resonated a lot when Bandit's pulling out the sign. I think for so many people, for so many different
reasons. Stop it, you're going to make us cry again.
Yeah, sorry. It's an amazing moment. I guess I just wonder, do you have any particular ideas at the moment that maybe means for you? Or is that something from being a dad and having to make those sorts of choices? Just anything about that particular moment, because it's an absolutely incredible one.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, definitely. It really is Bandit choosing the unseen, I guess, argument going on within Bandit in that episode and previous ones.
Mm.
Is him trying to put, a monetary value on community and friends and family and that sort of thing. So. Mm. It's not meant to be like there's something wrong with chasing more money or a better job or something like that. It's just Bandit's in a situation and the family's in a situation where this particular job means they've got to move. And it could go one way or the other. Obviously, it could, as Chili says, it could be good for our family, and it might really be good for our family. But he's trying to balance up, they're both trying to balance up all these intangibles which don't have a monetary value. And it's just as I get older and raise the kids that you realize how much it's worth having just two kids who live next door, or four kids who live on your street, or even a flat street to live on so that bikes can go out there, or what a cul-de-sac is worth over a slightly busier road.
Yeah.
Because you see, and what having one grandparent nearby is worth, or four, or being at a school where you get along with the parents, or, you know, where you've got like-minded parents or whatever. All these, I guess, intangibles have a monetary value, and I've only started to piece together what that value is as my kids get older. So if it's Bandit, it's all unseen, obviously, but I think parents, I think you're reacting to it because you know the all those things in your own parenting lives that, Brendan, this is a bit where you ding the little bell and say, not a parent, I think, mate. I've listened to your podcast. On my
iPod. That's the most poignant bell digging of all time.
And so Bandit, he ultimately makes that decision. Is it the right or the wrong decision? The whole point of the episode is you don't know. But it's him just putting a value, I guess, on community and family and a thousand other things.
And I personally just love how much physical effort that takes out of you. So it's, you know, that more than pulling up the sign, it's making this choice. And there's a brilliant shot. I love the little bit that gets me is just there's a zoomed out shot of him just heaving with breath. I think it's just after he's thrown it. It's a very quick shot. But there's just a little bit of, imbalance. It's just a little bit over, not our usual Bandit face. There's just something more going on there. Yeah, and that hits me every time. It's just like losing a little bit of control, or a lot of control maybe, but, you know, making this choice.
And I love also the one that gets me is the team healer aspect of this, that it's not just, as Frisky sort of alludes to, because your husband said so.
Mm.
It's, you know, Chili's on board, even though you can sort of sense that she's perhaps got doubts over it, but it's the, am I making a mistake? Yeah, probably.
Probably,
but let's do it together.
Yeah,
and I just, 100%. I love that. You know, when times are tough, it's really important. I feel, you know, me and my wife have been through some really tough stuff, and we always say in those hard times, you know, it's team Alan, that's us. And to see that, to see, you know, Bandit and Chili in that, you know, they're not sure which way they're going to go, and to be on the same team is just, oh, just beautifully written.
Thanks. Yeah, that's what it's all about, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that wasn't a question. I just had to put that there. Sorry.
No, absolutely. Oh, well, if we just want to keep quoting all our favorite bits with you, Joe.
He knows them. He knows them all.
At you and with you. But like, just don't take my hesitancy to do it as a sign that I don't want to. Please take it as if we start, there goes all our time with you.
Yep.
But believe me, when you're not online, we're just this bit and this bit and this bit. Oh, my God, this bit.
That was a great part of our experience last weekend, was just coming home on the tram and just working through the episode and remembering all the bits.
That's why we do this.
That is why we do this. But I think that's we get to do that right now, though, because now we've got our segment.
Ooh. Yes.
Because we realized we've done a lightning round-esque segment with you last time, Joe. So this time we've had to change it up a bit. So now this segment is entitled Tickling Joe Brum. So please show us your juicy ribs. And the basic idea of this one here is just tell us something from The Sign that when you're watching it now, even after however many times you've watched it, that still tickles you or still catches you or affects you, or anything you're particularly proud of that you or the team came up with as part of this one.
Can I still do the music?
You can.
Here
we
comes.
Go. Here
do
we
the
go.
Music.
Okay, it's happening.
Serious music. Serious music. Okay.
Very serious.
All right,
vibes.
I'll start the first one. Your favorite piece of physical comedy or a visual joke? Oh, sorry, not favorite. I spent the whole time explaining. The one that tickles you.
Well, my wife, she mentioned one the other day where when she watched it was right after Bluey gets the front seat and they're driving, and I think Chili's talking to Cookie, and Bluey's just looking around the whole front seat. She's very excited, her eyes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she noticed it, and I like those
amazing
moments, because it's very intentional, you know, to have Bluey. She wouldn't just be looking out the window at that point. She's just scanning the whole thing, and
yes,
I remember
this might be my only chance. Take it in.
Yeah, and we really spoke with layout to push her up in the seat. She naturally she was quite low, but we had to get her up because we needed to get some of that mouth in there for the smile, you know.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So look, that one's my wife's. It's nice when someone notices something you very intentionally did, and you mentioned one before with when he after he throws the sign. I mean that panting.
Yeah.
That's one of my. That tickles me because there's so much that is going on in his head. He's suddenly just charting a new course, and he's not just tired because he's thrown the sign.
Yeah.
It's like 6 months of decision you know what it's like.
Yeah.
All just kind of coming out of him physically, and he's lost, and it's not until Chili jumps on him that he's sort of found again.
Oh boy.
And then the Bluey and Bingo run across, and there's that beautiful shot of like everything in motion and this joyousness. Yeah.
And the Chili takedown, and then the tracking shot. The dynamic shots in this episode. I said I wasn't going to do it, but now I'm doing it. The dynamic shots of them just getting out of the car and stumbling a little, then boom, and it's so good. The new angles with which you see the front of the house and tracking along, and the parallax of things changing. It's the same place, but you're seeing it in new ways in every episode. I've said too much.
Am I allowed to do this? Am I allowed to do this? Put my hand over your mouth?
Can we do that?
Well, it's very rare for us to use depth of field.
Yeah.
There's something that always looks a bit, I don't know, it's never worked for me, blurring the backgrounds. It kind of looks really reminds you in a 2D show.
Right.
A digital, like a computer-made show. So we don't tend to do it that often, but I just thought, if the shot was right in this context, having that depth of field on that moving tracking shot would look pretty cool.
But it helps those moments stand out, and the importance of them really rings true. Yeah. Is there, correct me if I'm wrong, is there an element of a narrow, a sort of small depth of focus in like the peaceful moments with the, like in the weekend with the little bug and all those things? Or is that just a, is that another quality that that helps those moments kind of pop?
Yeah, we tend to use them from memory for those super close-ups. We'd probably blur the backgrounds a bit, but some shows would blur the background, just like you can see me on my camera now, right?
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Close-up, blur the background. And it's very tempting, but I never wanted to do that, and I've never liked it. But, yeah, so we save it for very special shots.
Yeah, amazing. Well, in true us style, we're turning our
lightning
round.
That was question one of the lightning round.
The super fast lightning round.
I have to get in there. I love the cricket melon hats.
Oh, yes.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Every time. And, of course.
Thank you.
so funny. Good.
And that it's the three brothers at the cricket. And they're just hard on.
Yeah.
And that's his picture. That's so good. And the whoever came up with the way that Chili looks, the butt shot when she's cleaning the car, it's hilarious to look at, and I can feel physically what it would be like
stretching
lying in
over.
The car to cleaning that out. So whoever came up with that, like, kudos. That's so nice.
Well, that was another one. My wife, when we watched it, she just said, man, so many times as a mum you end up doing that.
That's so true.
Nice.
Because it just gets so gritty. So bad.
Yeah.
Suze is seriously must be the hero for all my favorite Chili moments.
Yeah. All right. You're up, Brendan.
All right, I'm up. All right, cool. So an audio gag or line delivery that tickles you, Joe?
Is tickles have to make me laugh or just something I really like?
No.
Whatever.
No, something
takes
you
your
like,
fancy.
Something that still impacts you.
Well, on the top of Mount Cutha, Chili's delivery of you took your first steps in that house.
Yes.
I obviously meant to be an emotional scene. It's finally in midpoint in the app, you finally want Chili to crack and reveal that she's just putting a brave face on. And I remember sitting here, I think Mel was probably in LA or something recording, and you know, 150 eps, it still is like, oh yeah, Mel can act. Like,
yeah.
Why don't you ask her to cry? Like, if I ask her to cry during a line, she will cry. And I said, do you think you could get, you know, a little choked up in that line? And just, that was the one we used was the very next delivery. And it's really just really well delivered. It's not overdone. It's just that one line we do it, and then she's back to sort of business. But, yeah, that's probably one of my favorite lines in the ep.
Oh, boy. And I wasn't going to say it, but seeing as you said that line, like, it's not, it works by itself. Just though, of course, you know, you took your first steps in that house, but we are viewers of Bluey. We know that moment. We've seen that moment in Baby Race. And so in the montage at the end, and she's that one bit that absolutely destroyed me when I was sitting in the cinema, when she's standing in the kitchen looking at the floor. I'm like, I know that's what she's thinking about. And that slayed me. Absolutely. I was done at that point.
That's cool. That's just twisting the knife, that shot.
Yeah. Oh, well.
You know, so well. All right, Joe, your favorite little piece of animation. And I'm talking like, you know, a couple of seconds, like a background character. A tiny little piece that you reckon no one's noticed from the sign.
Oh, God. This is like picking your favorite kid.
That's why it can just be just one that at the moment is working for you. That's why I didn't want it to be favorite.
Oh, man. Well, three come to mind. One is Jerry's scene on the top of Mount Cutha with they're all on top of each other's shoulders. It's a combination of Beth Durack and Jerry, where they Muffin goes and tries to get the thing out, like that, you know, just a nightmare of a scene. I love Kiara's scene of Chili opening the back door of the truck and to get the baby seat.
Yep.
Yes.
Just purely functional animation, but it's just done so well. And I love Liam's I'm picking three here. I could keep going, but I love Liam's shot of Chili covering the mouths up of all the kids.
And using the tail to do so. So good. Yeah.
I'm going to shout out to whoever did the dad release with the little Bingo's feet moving because yeah. she wants to get let go, and you can mainly yep. see it through Bandit's hands. Yeah. Whoever did that, like, oh, that was so nice.
I'll quickly blow my own horn. I animated Stripe and Trixie dancing at the wedding.
Nice.
Yes. Look on Stripe's face.
<So good>. He said, let's
There's
go.
There's a little, if I have one regret, and I've got several, but I was trying to tell a little backstory just in pictures, I guess, with Trix and Stripe. That, yeah. You know, yeah. they're kind of a volatile couple. And the climax at the moment is them dancing again at the wedding.
Yeah.
I wanted to, when he crawls out of that bush, there was the original line was, "Where's my Trixie?"
Oh,
like
wow,
he's just, he needs his Trix. And that was going to be the sort of finish of that story arc, but this is their cycle, but it just it didn't cut through enough for some reason, so we just went with the other.
It was sure. cool though, because one of the kids playing on the table, and you could see in the background
the socks,
them yeah. having a little bit of a
they're arguing a little bit,
but the dancing, correct me if I'm wrong, that does come after that moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's I do think, it hasn't ruined their night. They're, you know, they're still cutting a rug together.
Yeah. Happy ending.
Yeah.
Next one, this is a little bit more on character performance or a true to character moment. What one tickles you?
These are great questions. All right. Well, I reckon true to character. So maybe if I pick on Bandit,
mm-hmm.
Bandit doesn't feature much in this, but I like actually in the car at the beginning where Bluey's asking Chili, you know, what's wrong with this city? And yep. she says nothing.
Yeah.
And there's just 50 frames go by, and Bandit kind of leans in, and he's talking to Chili.
Yeah.
But also to Blue, you know, but remember this whole argument for what we're doing. And that had to be really carefully acted and voice acted.
Yeah.
And I think we pulled that off, you know.
Yeah, 100%. It's such a good moment to see because, you know, Bandit's not oblivious to this. Like it would have been so easy to play that as Chili's having that moment and Bandit doesn't notice it, but he's got his eyes and ears open. He's not doing this blindly. He's factoring in everything with love, but he just really does believe that this is the right move at that time. Yeah,
totally. And he's got a drive as well.
Yeah, he's driving as well.
Safely.
10-2.
I have to say for me, that's the Rads. It's really nice to get a little bit more of an idea into Rads at the current time. Just like, because obviously I'm not very good at this.
It's
like a fantastic. And the moment he has with Bandit as well. So it's really nice to have those moments.
You worry too much, little brother.
Yeah.
Well, look, in my head, Uncle Rad and then Paddy Rammel's character from Moody Christmas and Colin are all basically the same character in my head.
Nice.
I just like to imagine.
It's,
even though they're written totally differently, and that each of those shows has a beautiful, unique, distinct character.
Nice.
I just love that dude so much, and I love those characters so much. I just go, you know what? Radley's just a dog version of them.
He's the man. That's there's a reason he's killing it.
Yeah.
All right. So a callback to a previous ep that still sort of tickles you and sits well with you from The Sign, because there was a few of them in there to choose from.
Yeah, there is. Well, it's probably got to be. We've already mentioned Winton's dad and the callbacks. But, look, I think the fact that the butterfly is from Slide, I got quite excited about that early on because I figured there'd be a moment where a 6 or 7-year-old eventually, even playing the sort of cause and effect game, eventually throws it back. And initially the episodes I thought were all going to just go out in one hit, right? But there's this big gap and all that. But I thought there would be a moment where a little kid would piece it together and go, oh my God, like if Bingo and Leela didn't save that caterpillar, then the coin wouldn't have ended up in the slot and they would have had to move. Like the further back you can take that, the better. So
you would have thought about that.
Is it probably pretty funny that I'd be asking this one, but a parenting moment that tickles
Ding.
You?
Parenting moment. I like that Chili takes them all in the car with her.
Yeah.
Even though it's to kind of, you know, to keep a lid on the,
yeah.
the situation.
And then the way she deals with all the kids.
Yeah. And a lovely little moment of aunting, I think, is she's really kind to the nieces. Like she doesn't even think twice about, look, this kid needs to go to the toilet. We've got to pull over. Or,
yes.
You know,
yes.
These things happen, Muffin. And she's very kind.
And they almost had Frisky. They were so close.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, the ultimate parenting thing, which is the point of the story, is that the effort she's putting in to try and keep Louis' spirits up and saying it's a big adventure and all this, you know, even though it's tearing her up. So that's the main thing you do as a parent.
Mm. I think, well, I'm going to pick the kid think or kid logic moment that still tickles you. So something the kids think or, you know, have perception about that gives you that sense of like, oh, I like that one still.
Well, I mean, the whole second act kind of rested on a kid and adults watching as well, but a kid believing that pulling a for sale sign out solve the problem. So that whole kind of drive did rest on that bit of kid logic, which may be a stretch, but I'm hoping it's not.
Yeah, I love that.
Frisky works it out. Like when they're talking.
Yeah.
Chili's like, well, why is pulling the sign down? And Frisky gets it straight away.
She's Frisky who figures it out. That's a really nice moment between Bluey and Frisky. But I also love that when Muffin sort of gives it away in the car, she needs Frisky to help her with the sign. Bluey's like, Muffin. Like she still feels... Yeah. Secretive or silly enough about the belief that, I don't know, that she's still not fully comfortable with it. Yeah. That she still wants the plan to be secret. I don't know.
Totally. Yeah. And there is a lovely little bit of animation with Frisky. After Frisky finds that out, her and Chili just exchange a very quick little glance, which is a nice moment. And I thought would happen. It's just the two parents looking at each other, thinking that's quite sweet, you know, or quite heartbreakingly sweet, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Bluey, she doesn't want the parents to find out, you know. It's pulling this sign out is, you know, so it's all got to be a secret.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved Bingo because you spend most of the episode going, oh, Bingo's just super chill. She's okay about moving house, moving city. And then that twist at the end when she actually doesn't realize that the selling the house means moving and she flips on it and you go, oh, and the moment when Chili realizes as well, you're like, oh, that's some kid logic that would just catch you off guard. And followed up by that amazing moment, you know, there's all this talk about Bandit pulling out the sign, which is great. For me, the bit where just Bingo is putting everything she's got and you hear that little kid sort of almost grunt where she's just trying and she can't do it. Oh, that's wonderful. I mean, amazing kid logic to get her to the place where she needed to be for the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
oh, boy.
Twisting the knife.
Yeah. Oh, man.
What are we at now? 360, 180?
Multiple knives.
Yeah, an oscillation. a new character that tickles you. Oh, that's annoying that I'm writing this. That sounds like I'm fishing for something, but no.
This is even our last question, so you have to say it in the way.
It might be.
That's the last question.
Oh, but hang on. Isn't our last question supposed to be about poop jokes?
It traditionally is.
There's no poop jokes.
No, somebody else asked this question. I didn't mean to ask that question about a new character. Sure.
the new character that really tickles you.
I like, well, he doesn't even have a name. I think we called him Police Dog.
I probably should have known that.
I think he does a great job. I love Joel Edgerton. I love his movies.
Yeah.
And I love what the art directors did for his, you know, his uniform and all that.
Yes,
and
it's so good.
I love his final line, the way Joel delivers, she was a little bit cranky.
Yes.
There's a whole, I love it because it's just, I would love to see that ticket you know, that little scene would be great between Joel and Frisky.
Yeah. Yes, 100%.
How that interaction went down.
Oh, that could be an extra. I would watch that. I love that Frisky really seems to earn her name in this episode. She, like, I know the tradies said that I wouldn't want to be your mum's enemy. I wouldn't want to be Frisky's enemy. I reckon she could be a little bit cranky.
Bradley, call me now.
Yeah, no. I would try and stay in her good books. Thank you very much.
I have to say, though, I'm on Team Bucky. Brilliant balance of annoying character, but you don't treat him as the villain.
Nah.
Which is like, and he's still funny, but
Bandito, the Big Bang.
We all know someone like that. I work with someone like that. It's like you had a camera into my workplace. You know?
How much discussion went into how many honks there would be?
Yeah, I complimented Dan the other day about that, actually, because he handled all that, and it was... I said it was just the perfect amount of honks. It's way too many.
The timing,
the rhythm of them.
100%.
Yeah. No, I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, no, wait. I do have one last question for you, Joe. We're going to keep this one. So I'm going to ask, when you got to the third hour of recording with Brendan for the 6-odd lines he has, did you start to feel like you'd made the wrong choice?
Right.
It's like, I haven't quite captured this, Joe. I think I can do it. No, just one more take, please.
Oh, God. You'll have to remind me. I remember going pretty smooth, Brendan, wasn't it?
I think so. It's actually, Joe, it's written in the group document here. Peek behind the curtain. It says, a dot point, joke at Brendan's expense, so I don't want to ruin it, but I'll remember it. I do remember in the script that I got, there were some pickups, some yes and woos and that might be used for the wedding or whatever. And I think after that, I was just like, do you need anything else? And I think you were like, nope, we're good, Brendan.
Get out of
it's
here.
It's okay. Kid. We got Joel Edgerton. We got Rove McManus.
Because I would have.
We've got enough, Brendan.
I would have done it all day. That was one of the best days of my life. That and Saturday when we got to see it.
Yeah, good on you, man. Well, look, it's when I first went to, did the tour of my art college when I sort of stumbled into animation. I applied for illustration and I thought, I'll take a tour of the animation studio. And then quickly was like, hey, this place looks cool. And then in talking to the lecturer, he said, so you'll make a short film and the animators usually do their own voices for the cartoon characters. And that was the moment where I went, oh, my God, like my voice can be a cartoon character. I couldn't believe it. And that made me want to do the course. And I soon found out I'm a shit actor and I didn't use my voice, but.
you were doing some, when I was in the booth, you were doing some line reading there, Joe, that really pointed me in the right direction. I was like, oh, how do I match that? So I don't know. You're being a bit too humble there, I think.
Possibly.
Hey, Joe, don't put yourself down. You're the guy who tips the dirt, I hear.
I am. Yeah,
in the dirt episode. So, you know, that's the big part. You should be proud.
Yeah, where you want it. And the toilet paper dog as well, I think, in the shopping center.
Oh, really?
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, big parts.
Yeah.
Where would we be without the toilet paper dog?
he's got a spin-off coming.
Eventually, there'll be some theory how that eventually impacted, you know, the butterfly getting somewhere or something. So you can feed it back as much as you like. It's okay.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, Joe, quick story. Sorry, I've had a lot of quick quotes, quick stories today. But no, I was on the delivery run delivering the mail just yesterday, I think. And there were some kids out the front playing on the trampoline. And they're like, Brendan. I said, yeah, what's it? And who are you in Bluey? And then another kid on the trampoline said, he's the sheepdog. Like, don't you know this? And I said, yeah. And I said, I'm the one who says, oh, so it doesn't have a ball. And then just like hearing myself here, I'm just like, I'm quoting myself. This is rad. And I said, I also say, I'm just trying to figure out where it is. And I just like hadn't done it yet. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I get to call. It was a really cool, weird moment that I loved.
That's a good party trip now, mate.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I'm usually good at doing like sort of okay impressions, but now I've got an impression that I might actually be able to do.
Yourself.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Joe. Thanks, as Joe. Always. Yeah. We probably won't mention the fact that we talked to you again.
No, probably won't. We never
comes
up on our show.
No. We're very humble. Thank you so much, Joe.
I think you sent your questions through, and the picking three of my favorite bands, that was actually the hardest thing I've had to do in years.
Oh, yes.
Oh, right.
Yep.
That was
going to be one of our, we had a couple of icebreakers there, but then we're like, well, we shook your hand like 5 days ago, so the icebreakers felt a little bit underdone.
No,
but you can tell us if you like. We've made you think about it.
It was too stressful. I was like,
But thank you so much for the sign. It is a gift for each individual person who experiences
truly.
It.
Truly, yeah.
And over and over again.
Yeah.
So many different things to notice and experience. So,
yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, much appreciated, fellas. Well done on the podcast too.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, so good.
no worries, fellas. Yeah, well, look, good to talk to you guys, eh? And stay tuned.
Well, how good.
I mean, what are we doing? Let's stop pulling around. This is, hey, what a guy. I mean, what are we talking about here? What's the point?
We got to meet the man. We got to meet his whole family. We get to chat to him again. We're just all friends now.
How do you even say it?
How do you say it, Marty? Save us.
Aisle 300. No, wait.
This is just stuff that we got to do.
Just normal things.
Normal times.
Ooh. Our next regular episode is going to be such a downer after this. Like, how do you come down from where we are to go back to scheduled programming?
We're going to have to do 4 episodes in 1 episode.
Okay. Interesting. I think just reviewing a Bluey episode is a good way to start.
Yep.
I think that's a good... If you got that on your side, it's better than you think. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, indeed. Well... Thank you, listeners. Thank you to Joe. Thank you to Ludo and the BBC and everyone involved with making this wonderful show that's gotten us through an amazing week in our lifetime.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone. And back to you in the studio, Owen.
Thanks, Frank. Now back to Snookers with the traffic.